angled and waited for a downward thrust from horseback. The hilt was padded with rotting maroon velvet tied with fine gold wire that had long frayed through. The ferrule was brass, the guard and knuckle bow silver. An indentation on the back of the flat blade was engraved with hunting scenes. From the tip to the doghead pommel, the sword was only 2 inches short of 4 feet. As Jorgen prepared another round, Ichichul drew the saber from its leather sheath, feeling the cold hilt against his palm. Hearing the stamping of hooves, the American looked up at the last moment and parried the lethal downcut of the glittering sword with his rifle. Ichichul put so much force into the blow that it smashed clean through the stock of the rifle a couple of inches behind the finger guard, cutting Smith in the right shoulder. He dropped the splintered remains of the Remington, clapping his left hand to the bleeding wound. Smith stood still and felt his doom approach.
You done me, you bastard.
Ichichul swung the saber again. It sliced through the fur hood, skin, flesh, and muscle, through the cervical vertebrae of Jorgen's neck, clean out the other side. For a long second, the corpse stood upright, head balanced precariously in place. Then, the head rolled and toppled, bouncing on the stones. Blood gushed high in the cold air, the body slumping slowly to its knees, then folding on its side and lying still. Pleased with his triumph, Ichichul wiped the blade of the saber on a handful of his stallion's mane and sheathed the sword once more.
So die all who oppose the Narodniki.
Not a bullet wasted.
Bochka still held his wounded shoulder.
One was wasted on me.
Is it bad, brother? Will you stay to seek Pornul, wherever he might be?
No, brother. I ride on with you. Let us take more of these soft Americans.
We shall take the entire land, brother.
Ichichul felt good. If this was the best this nation could do, then there was no need to fear. Before they moved eastward, Ichichul carefully folded and put away the phrase book. It had been disappointing not to be able to use it more, but these peasants were such lack-brained weaklings that communication was hardly needed. One last sentence caught his eye, though, and he spoke it carefully to the blood-sodden corpse, lying decapitated in the snow beside the gurgling brook.
Much thanks for your help, sir. Here is a nickel for your trouble.
Ichichul heeled his black stallion eastward and was followed by the others deeper into the bleakness of what had once been Alaska. Ryan parried the first spear thrust, but cut his left hand on the white bone point. Grabbing the end of the shaft, he pulled hard, swinging the dwarf mutie to one side, knocking the second attacker off balance. With odds of 3-1, he knew that he had to do something fast. The longer it went, the shorter his odds became. He dropped the useless jammed gun and tried to draw the steel machete from its sheath, but the muties were too close for that. And if he tried to go for the 6-hour beneath his coat, they'd take him for sure. He had to buy himself a little time and space. Holding the barbed end of the spear, Ryan launched himself toward the creature holding the other end of the spear. The mutie slipped on the ice and nearly fell, loosening his hold on the spear. Ryan tried to wrench it from his grasp, but the gloved fingers clawed onto it. The muties had been expecting Ryan to keep away from them and had been taken by surprise, but now the other two closed in again.
Bastard!
Ryan dodged a thrust aimed at his ribs from the mutie on the left, then moved a few steps toward the top of the track. Knowing that the only way to fight close combat was barehanded, he dropped his gloves. The hilt of the panga slipped into his fingers and he drew the blade, waving it in front of him in a singing curtain of death. He waved the three muties toward him with his bleeding left hand.
Come on now!
They seemed to be speaking to each other. Their slit eyes flicking nervously to him and then back, they spread into a half circle about 15 feet away from him. Above all, Ryan didn't want any of them sneaking behind him. Best defense was a good offense, he decided. They had the advantage of reach with the long spears. If he let them keep him away, they'd kill him in the end, no doubt about that. Ryan watched them, noticing that the mutie to the left seemed crippled and moved slower and more clumsily than the other two. He feinted to the right, making them back away from the whirling steel. Immediately, he darted low and fast to the left, feeling the clunk of the blade cutting into flesh and bone. He'd hit the mutie just above the knee, parrying a spear thrust with his left hand. The little fur-clad figure toppled sideways, dropping its spear to the ice. The others hesitated, seeing their comrade down and done for. Ryan didn't hesitate at all. He slashed at the mutie's exposed shoulder and neck with the panga and simultaneously retrieved the wooden spear with his free hand. Blood jetted and the fur fell back from its face. Ryan winced at the horror of the mutations in the dwarf's skull. It was squashed vertically so that the forehead rested squarely on the buried eyes. The distance between brows and chin couldn't have been more than 3 inches. There was also evidence of an appalling skin disease that had left the face raw and weeping, with crusts of small pustules nesting around the eyes, nose, and mouth. All of that registered in a splinter of frozen time as the machete descended, nearly beheading the mutie in a single blow. Ryan turned away from the twitching corpse. He tossed the spear in the air, catching it in his right hand, and transferred the bloodied blade to his left. The two surviving muties seemed torn between aggression and flight. Ryan solved the dilemma for them. Reaching behind him like an athlete throwing a javelin, he hurled the clumsy spear with all his power at the nearest of the attackers. The sharp ivory point pierced the sealskin belt that the mutie wore about its sagging midriff, emerging with shreds of crimson flesh and gristle slightly to the left of the spine. Ryan saw that the mutie was done for. It had fallen on its side and was rolling back and forth, the long shaft of the spear scraping against ice and stones. Even in death, the mutie's gloved hands were clasped around the wood. The last mutie, the one with the third residual leg, was backing away, reaching under his furs with his left hand. Ryan watched him carefully, suspecting some kind of blaster, but all he pulled out was a tiny whistle of bone. Before he could raise it to his lips, bringing who knows how many reinforcements, Ryan hurled himself toward the little figure. The gleaming ivory tip of the spear darted at him, but he parried with a ferocious cut of the panga, snapping the spear in half, the point falling to the ice and skittering away. The mutie raised his hands to try to save himself from the death cut, but Ryan wasn't going to postpone the execution. Bone crunched as the steel blade smashed through the mutie's fur-clad right wrist, severing the hand so that it dropped like a furry animal. Blood gushed out into Ryan's face, warm and salty, nearly blinding him. But he quickly wiped his eye clear, cutting again at the blurred figure before him. The machete penetrated the mutie's shoulder almost to the breast. Ryan pushed at the creature's face, knocking him down. Putting a boot on its throat, he jerked the blood-slick metal clear, then jammed it through the fur hood where he guessed the mouth should be. He heard teeth splinter and felt the shock run clear up his arm as the tip of the panga penetrated through the back of the mutie's neck.